Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello and welcome to Unheard. I'm Freddie Sayers. Up until recently, Sweden was a country that anyone on the left of the political spectrum held up as a hero. Then COVID happened and their more liberal response was quite controversial, to put it mildly. And now, as of the past few days, there is a new government in charge in Sweden, which consists of the right-wing parties in coalition, and alongside them, but not actually in government, is the Swedish Democrats, which are often called far-right, and we'll investigate whether that's actually true. Happily, this weekend here in London, we are joined by Ivar Arpi, who is normally resident in Sweden, where you run your blog Rak Höger, which and podcast alongside it. Yeah. But you're here in town, so we thought we had to catch up and find out what your perspective was. What does this mean for populism, for Sweden, for democracy, and the rest of it? So welcome, Ivar.
Thank you. It's very nice to be here.
2 days ago, a new agreement was signed among the right-wing members of the new coalition in Sweden. This means Sweden no longer has a left, centre-left, social democratic government. It has a right-wing government. Tell us about that. Is this a new right-wing government and how right-wing is it?
Yes, it's a right-wing government. But to be right-wing today is to have a firm stance on crime, on migration, especially migration. So everything is about migration. If you're pro-migration, pro-generous migration policies, then you're left-wing, even though you might be a neoliberal when it comes to economic policies and you want flat tax and stuff like that. So the center party that was part of the support of the social democratic government, they are the most right-wing of all the parties in the parliament when it comes to economic issues. But they are left-wing nowadays. So that's a realignment of what it means to be left and right. So, yeah, to answer a short question with a long answer, yes, this will be a right-wing government, and it will be a paradigm shift in Sweden, I would say.
The party that you just mentioned there, the Sweden Democrats, is the controversial one. This is why people like the New York Times and many other sort of mainstream publications are very anxious about this situation, because they think fascism has returned to Europe. We hear about the Giorgia Meloni government in Italy, kind of in concert with this new right-wing Swedish government. And there's a lot of people who are very uneasy about it. Tell us about the Swedish Democrats in particular. I mean, do you support them, for example?
I don't support any political party. I don't think you should. I'm very Swedish. I know that here in Britain, newspapers support different parties, and but I don't support the parties, but yes, I'm for a change of government.
So Swedish Democrats, who are they? Yeah. Where did they come from? There's a lot, rather like the Giorgia Meloni party, yeah. There's this idea they're descended from fascists, even though they may not be now. What's the truth, do you think?
So I think that comparison is interesting and fruitful, because the Sweden Democrats, when they were formed in the late 80s, they've recently published their own white book made by a scientist, and he concludes that about a third of the forming members of Sweden Democrats had roots in far-right organizations, neo-Nazi organizations, so they were most definitely on the fringe and extreme. And what they say themselves then as a defense is that those members, after a few years, were gone. So and they've moved and tried to be so to speak, they become more mainstream,
acceptable.
Yes, and that and the current leadership has been there for since the 90s, and they've been the primary force behind that change.
What have they changed to try and get that more acceptable appearance? Have they actually changed their policy? Because they used to be in favor of repatriation of immigrants. Are they still in favor of that?
Yes, and I would say that repatriation is something that more parties now are talking about in Sweden. To the Sweden Democrats and to the Swedish people, that's the most important issue together with crime. We've had soaring crime in all over Sweden, and we've had a complete change in Sweden when it comes to our demographics. So we are now have a more heterogeneous population than the United States had when they had the record high levels of migration during the early 1900s. We have more foreign-born people as part of the population than they ever did. And now Swedish population is, when it comes to diversity, you can only compare it to Britain, Holland, and France. But there's a difference that the influx of from the Commonwealth in Britain and from the colonies in France and the Netherlands was over a much larger period of time. In Sweden, it's 20 years. So the last 10 years and 20 years has completely changed how Sweden looks and the challenges we face.
So what are the numbers on that? Just
25% of the population in Sweden are foreign-born.
So is that a controversial number? Would every newspaper agree with that?
Or yeah, would... yeah. No. The number is the Statistical Central Bureau. So that's a public statistics. So, of course, the political implications, that's where the controversiality ensues.
That means of a roughly 10 million, or maybe it's now 11 million population, 2 or 3 million are...
2 million are foreign-born, and if you look in the younger population, it's people who are foreign-born or have parents who are foreign-born, it's almost 40 or 45% of the population in the ages 0 to 44. And if you look in the big cities, it's a majority of the young population that are either foreign-born themselves or have a migration ancestry. So it's a completely, like, just if you go back 20 years, the cities look different, and we had challenges with integration, but not on a scale like this.
So we're in a slightly strange or paradoxical situation that the Sweden Democrats are excluded from the government. They are there in a kind of confidence and supply arrangement with the minority right-wing coalition. They're not allowed into the government, but actually they've influenced all the other major parties in recent years. Is that a fair summary?
I think it's a fair summary, but I don't really... If you summarize it like that, you give them too much credit, because they are not geniuses. In Sweden, if you compare to Poland, Hungary, Czechia, Slovakia, where migration is an issue, it's more of an abstract issue. In Sweden, you cannot go outside the door without or be at your workplace without being confronted by the issue. Because it was such a large influx of people in 2015, for example, and after that as well. So there's no place in Sweden where you can go and you don't see migration. There are no small cities in Sweden where there's not like 10, 20, 30% of the population is either foreign-born or have roots there. So the issue became, the reality was so pervasive that all parties had to deal with it. So Sweden Democrats wouldn't have... the reason people vote for them is that they view it like Sweden Democrats has the best answer to this problem. But everybody started talking about it because the whole population is talking about it. And we were talking about nothing else because we see it every day.
So I guess you are coming from this, at this from a certain angle. You're
No, I'm objective.
Well, you're...
And neutral. You're... Impartial.
Your website is called Rak Höger, which means straight right.
Yes.
So one kind of, you can deduce from that what your angle is going to be. I guess the people who disagree with you would say, first of all, what's wrong with that? You talk as if we need to find a we can't find a town without immigrants. Well, why would you need a town without immigrants? Why are you looking for one? I think people will feel uncomfortable with that kind of talk. And here in London, we've been used to a multicultural kind of society for decades and decades. And it appears to continue functioning reasonably well. Why is it a bad thing that there's been this big influx of migrants?
That's a great question, and I'm glad you asked it, because I think sometimes it can be confusing, because you always talk about it as if it's a problem. And of course, if you look at a lot of Sweden, we have amazing success stories as well. We have, I think, 50% of the doctors in Sweden are either foreign-born or educated in another country. And other professions as well are, to a large degree, people from other countries coming in, becoming Swedish. Their kids are going to Swedish schools, and it's just success stories. And it's ironically, if you look at this debate, now it's two white males discussing this, but if you look in Sweden, in these issues, it's often been that it's like an Iranian-born and another, like an Arab Swede, and they are debating from different angles about how hard my integration is. And while you're seeing it, they're saying it in perfect Swedish, they've gone to Swedish school and they have a Swedish education and they're fully integrated. And one of them is saying integration is not working properly, and the other one is saying it's we should do this instead. So you have the success stories all the time in Sweden.
Which you acknowledge.
Yeah, of course. And also, when you say diversity is a strength, I would agree up to a point. And so that is still true. That still rings true. What we've had is a very large volume of migrants in a very short period of time. And also, we have had a very hard time to give them accommodation, and they have had a hard time finding jobs. So it used to be the way that because we had a much smaller influx of immigrants, they came to certain areas, then they got a job and moved away. So many of the first waves of migrants, they are basically living in Swedish areas now. So they are fully integrated, like the Greeks, the Turks, the Yugoslavs who came earlier and had a much easier time of it. What is happening now is that people are getting stuck in these areas, and there are no ethnic Swedes there. So there are no Swedish, no native Swedish speakers in the schools. There is no contact with the wider society from these areas. And in these areas, criminal gangs have taken over control over large parts of society, and people are captives in those parts.
So some people, I guess, would say that this is exaggerated. I mean, it's become a sort of right-wing meme, hasn't it, that gets talked about, that you know, there are no-go areas, you know, explosions, hand grenades, gang warfare is just a daily reality. The police have totally vacated these parts. Is that really true? I mean, do you walk through some of these areas outside Stockholm or outside Malmö? And what is the day-to-day real life experience there? Is it as terrifying as all that, or might they seem like normal functioning areas if you went through them?
I think if you compare it to the United States, it's much more dangerous in other parts of the world than in Sweden, of course. And it's not Brazil. It's not the go to a favela or you go to Baltimore. It's not the same. But the grenade violence and the bombs are on the same level as Mexico. And that's just facts. People are bombing in the central Uppsala, and you're bombing and you're shooting into like regular apartments in affluent areas.
And that's mainly intra-gang, is it? No, or between different gangs, different parts of the same immigrant community? Or?
And also against police, like bosses, police officers. And so they are threatened, police officers are threatened, and just the other day they shot into the house of a police constable's, like a higher up officer in the hierarchy. His house was shot up, and he lives in an affluent area in Gothenburg, the second largest city in Sweden. And if you go to the more crime ridden areas, daily life continues. It's the same in war zones. Children are playing, people are going outside, mostly. Even in Ukraine, children are playing. It's not the same as in Ukraine, but I mean, we have kids who are being killed at the playground because the criminals in Sweden are so reckless in their violence, and they have automatic rifles. And that's new. That is new. And at the same time, you have to keep... you say it's a right-wing meme, so to speak, with no-go areas. There are different trajectories here, because the schools, for example, in some of these areas has actually gotten better. So some of the trends, not all trends are worse, but it's still a huge challenge when the crime is so prevalent and it's everywhere and it's in schools people are afraid, even the police officers can be afraid to work in these areas. Of course, they go into these areas. It's not a no-go zone for the police, but if you don't have an errand, as most Swedes don't, you don't go to these areas. And that also increases the distance between the wider society and these
enclaves.
Yes.
So I guess there probably would be a good degree of agreement that the waves of immigration in recent years have been mismanaged, at least. Is that fair? I mean, across the mainstream political parties as well, there's a sense that integration hasn't been managed as effectively as it should be, that there's a real crime problem. I mean, that's not controversial. Is that right?
No, I think everyone is in agreement there.
Right. So at that point, it's a question of degree, and I want to move to this question of what we do about it, because we talked about repatriation, which is a genuine policy of the Swedish Democrats. Like, if you mention that in the UK context, or in many other countries, it would be, you know, jaw wide open. That is a completely kind of impossible zone to go into. There's a deep sense that once you've welcomed someone into your country, you at that point have responsibility to make it work. And maybe you made a mistake previously, but at that point they are a citizen and you have a bond with them. Is that not the same in Sweden? What does repatriation actually mean in practice?
So I think the British, if I can, it's always hard to review another country's policies, but I do think that the way Brexit was handled and the way the Tories interpreted their the increasing levels of support in the so-called Red Wall and what people expected from Brexit, they totally was stuck in a liberal conservative mindset that what they were going to deliver. And I think one of the things that they didn't deliver on was less migration to Britain, and that is one of the issues I think that will be. There's a space now for a Nigel Farage again, or somebody like him, to come in and make a run for it in those issues and see if those votes are really going to Labour or if they are going someplace else.
Even Nigel Farage was not talking about repatriation, as far as I recall.
That's migration. But what I say is that if you are an immigrant, and not all immigrants are refugees, you have to say, and if you come to another country and you behave badly and you're not you don't do your part of it, then I don't think it's too much to ask that then, okay, you go back. And I don't think if it was a mistake to take them in, I don't think it's something that you should never be able to correct. So, for example, right now, the agreement that's on the table between the Sweden Democrats, Moderate Party, Liberal and Christian Democrats, we will have the strictest migration policies in all of Europe. And the reason we will have that is because we were too welcoming. And now we're seeing too many bad consequences of that. And there's a...
What are the measures? Just share with the audience.
Some
details of that.
No, I don't have it in front of me, and I've just read it like one time.
The headlines.
The headlines, yeah. I don't have it in front of me, but one of the things is that if you're committing crimes in Sweden, and you are foreign born and you don't have a citizenship, it should always, that the rule should be that you will be dispelled from the country, and it's not been like that. And also that sometimes the way the rules are formulated is that if you have formed a bond with the country, even though you've raped or killed or done something horrible, that bond is still so strong according to the law that you are not supposed to be put out of the country, and that will also change. And repatriation has, I just have to say that it's been part of the policy for all governments in Sweden. So we've had repatriation policies in place forever. So you can get money.
Well, that's just for criminals, right?
No. So if you want to return to your country of origin, you can apply to get a grant, and you will be helped by Swedish agencies, and that's been in place forever. So this is not new, but the level of that grant, the sum, and the level of support, and how much of an incentive you will have to go back to your country of origin, that will increase now with this agreement that's on the table.
So just to be clear then, so repatriation, because when people hear that, they will think, what, are they rounding up immigrant communities and putting them on planes and sending them home? What you're saying is, it's if they're convicted of a crime, which I'm guessing is a very, very small minority of, you're talking about 2 million plus foreign-born Swedes. Mm. I mean, that's not even going to make a dent in that number in terms of people who are convicted of a crime. Obviously, it's a tiny minority. And then it's people who are voluntarily asking for access to a scheme that gives them money if they want to return to their country of origin. So is there any kind of world in which this makes a impactful difference to the immigration situation? Or is it actually just sort of an atmospheric change where it's sort of making Sweden seem less welcoming in some way? What's the truth of that?
No, I do think that if the people who have come are probably going to stay. And that's just the way it is. It's the way that it is all the time.
So, new government in place, due to all of these factors, we've now got essentially a not anti-immigration, but very close to anti-immigration Swedish government. I mean, as you say, it's some of the strictest rules in Europe, having been one of the most welcoming to immigrants.
Yeah.
In a sense, it's joining Denmark and other countries that have had a turn in that direction in recent years. Do you think that fixes it as an issue? Do you think voters will now be satisfied that sort of action has been taken? Or do you think it will carry on?
No, it will carry on. Those things are not to be fixed. These are problems that we will live with for generations. I mean, if we live together and we don't meet each other, and we have different identities, we speak different languages, we have different cultures, different religions. This is not something you solve in 4 years. This is not something you solve in 10, 20, 30 years. This is something you live with for 100 years. So this is not something, this is just a start of something.
So do you not have hope that, you know, look, I think Germany is a good example here, that after the big, wir schaffen das, we can handle it, wave of immigration in 2015, there was again.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
And the same kind of stories. There were worries about rapes or criminal gangs in Germany, and there was incidents in Cologne and elsewhere. And fast forward a few years, and actually, they have handled it. Those incidences are less common than they used to be, and there is a sense overall in which the worst fears of the populist right in Germany didn't play out, and they did accommodate that community. Why can't the same happen in Sweden?
I'm not so sure that what your description of Germany is correct, to say first and foremost. And I don't think Britain, France are success stories either. You have huge conflicts between people, groups. You saw gangs of Hindu nationalists and Pakistanis fight in the streets of, I fail to remember which city it was. But those kinds of things are part of Britain now, and it will be a part of France, and it will be a part of Sweden. So these are not things that one government can wish away with a few policies. It's just the start of something, and it will be long in the making. And you cannot correct mistakes that were made over a course of 40 years with just a few in a few years. So this is a question of a destiny question, so to speak. Like, what kind of country will Sweden be in two decades, three decades? It's a question of survival, it's a question of Swedish identity, and it's also a question of, will we be a country where we live, where we share institutions with each other, or we have separate institutions and we try to manage the level of conflict, like in Lebanon or Brazil. In Lebanon, it's of course based on along sectarian lines. In Brazil, it's class. That's the rich and the poor live separate lives. And in Sweden right now, we're becoming more like Lebanon and Brazil in certain aspects. There's a profound sadness in the whole of Swedish society. And people are very pessimistic. If you go back 15 years, 20 years, 30 years, Swedes were always optimistic. Like, my children will have it better than I did. Mm. And now a majority says the other way. And that's new.
That is, you find that in countries across the West, I would say now, yeah. A similar effect. But you're sounding pretty pessimistic, Ivar, I've got to say. I mean, it's bleak, the vision you're presenting. This is only a country that gets more divided. You end up in some kind of Lebanon-style situation. Where's the hope that we can actually reach across these barriers? I mean, I guess your critics might say, instead of investing energy in kind of highlighting the divisions and the need to, have stronger repatriation policies or whatever, why about going to these areas and seeing what needs to be done to bring those people in to society and to try to, rediscover a single common vision? Is it just naive? Is that what you think?
Yes, it's a naive vision that contact breeds closeness. Sometimes you meet people and you think the more you meet them, the less you like them. And
is that how you feel?
No, but I'm just saying that certain groups, let's take Hindu nationalists and Pakistanis. I don't think it's a good idea if they live like together, for example, if they have such opposing views and they've brought that conflict to Britain. Then perhaps it's better if they don't live as close to each other because they have such opposing views on so many issues. Closeness will not breed closeness of heart there. It will breed conflict. And sometimes that is just the way it is. People are very different. And I don't think you should be naive and think that people should just mix and that will be the cure for it. I don't think social engineering, we've tried that for a long time in Sweden, and it didn't work out that well all the time. The thing is that if you talk about what you're afraid of, then you can then it highlights what you feel are the challenges. So Lebanon is the challenge. There is that how can people live together in a common areas even though they have different religions and different ethnicities? So you don't become Lebanon. So of course it's not a utopia you're talking about, but you talk about something you want to avoid. And the same with Brazil. Do you want to have a country where there is the cleavages between classes and between the rich and poor are so deep that they're basically talking about two different countries? And that, so that's the challenge now for Sweden. Like, how can we keep the common areas, the commonalities?
But you seem to be saying we can't. I mean, I've got to ask, what's the Ivar Arpi prescription here? If we put you in charge of the Swedish government, you accept that the people who have arrived are basically there to stay, give or take a few thousand. What's the good plan here?
Yes, some of the good plans are, I would say that what they've managed now in government, we will see how it plays out. I don't think problems are solved in a 4-year period mostly, but many of the our own rust belt, so to speak, mirrors the one in Britain and also in the United States. How you can help them and how you can bring in more jobs for working class, and you can have a better situation for them. And there you can see that Sweden Democrats have more of a left-wing policy. So I would say that you need some sort of some left-wing policies are actually good when it comes to economics. You need more of state interventionism than we've had. And basically, I think you have to be patient with some of these things. I don't believe in a the only way historically that you make people the same is by a lot of violence. That's the only way it's ever been done. Like if you look at China, like the way people became Han Chinese, why everybody's saying that they're Han Chinese, it's not because they are Han Chinese. It's because they've been extremely oppressed over the course of thousands of years. And it's the same in, if you look here in Britain, the only reason you got rid of the troublesome Scottish Highlands, it was just you went up into the Highlands and removed them and put them in the Lowlands so you could control them. So almost everything you can do to make people the same that's been done historically is beyond the pale of the way we are conducting ourselves as a civilized nation. Now you can only do it by trying to convince people that they should join.
But I think there's an argument to be had about more optimism.
So why are you optimistic?
Well, I'm not saying I'm optimistic, but I feel like there's almost a requirement to be more optimistic than that, because otherwise it's just pure fatalism. And then you get into kind of number counting and general drift towards a more divided society and the fears of kind of, you know, white people becoming minorities, and you get into a very divisive sort of world there. Whilst I do think London, for example, is a success story, broadly speaking. There are examples like the one you've mentioned in places in the north of England, and there are parts of East London like that where communities are very sort of homogenous. But broadly speaking, I think the UK is a success story of how you can have quite high levels of immigration and not have violence. And you know, there'll be parts of America, no doubt, that would be similar. Normally it's the more affluent parts, you know, so London is a rich part of the country overall. And it makes it a hell of a lot easier for everybody to get along and for there to be a shared sense of purpose when the economy is doing well and where people are affording to make their lives better. I think it gets much harder when things are going badly and people sort of turn against each other. So maybe that's some cause for optimism that, you know, if the Swedish economy does well and there are jobs and there's money to go around and there are programs to bring in people from different cultures, you know, maybe this bleak, divided future doesn't need to happen.
Yeah, let's hope so. I just think that not to be impolite, but I think that's a privileged view of it. And I share the privilege because I know a lot of people from... That's why sometimes you talk about the division between anywheres and somewheres. And I think both you and me are part of the anywhere.
I'm half Swedish, half English.
Yes, and I'm here in London talking to you. So I just flew here and I'm flying back. But I think that division is really... It's not true, because many of the so-called somewheres are anywheres, in that they like different, they like to travel, and but they also like to have a sense of place and continuity. And if you are a part of the rich world, where the people you are meeting from different kinds of cultures, they are also very similar to you in the outlook on life and levels of education. And you're not seeing the problematic parts of diversity. So I would say that London is a great example of, most of London is of how it can work, and many parts of Stockholm as well. But the troublesome parts of migration is seen in other parts of the country, in Sweden, and in the same in many European countries, where those people who have come, if you look at the people who have come to Sweden, we have the, if you compare to other European countries, we have the least educated people with the highest rates of analphabetism of all immigrant populations in all of Europe, while the ethnic Swedes are one of the most highly educated, least most literate populations. So the divide between majority Swedes and our migrant populations is huge. And that's also something that makes for another experience of migration than, for example, a country like Britain, where many of the migrants coming here are coming, have a higher degree of education, and even when they come. So you also have, not all migration is the same, and not all experiences and challenges facing you are the same when it comes to migration.
Clearly, that is a failure of the Swedish policy. I think most people would agree with that. If these gaps in education and attainment are so wide, and the failure to integrate, failure to give proper employment opportunities to people after you've welcomed them in, what do you think it says, if anything, about the Swedish character? I don't know if it's possible to even generalize as broadly as that, but they're thought of, the country is thought of as being, you know, sort of optimistic, left liberal kind of paradise often. And that they sort of got it all sorted. But there's something in this inviting so many people in and then failing to actually truly welcome in that is a little bit, well, it's anxious making about what the Swedish character really is. Do you think we can make any statements like that?
I think you have to bring in the character of the migrants and what kind of people and how they are. Because it's not just a question, it's sort of a chauvinistic way to think that your character is the one deciding thing when it's a meeting of two, a meeting of peoples. So it's not just a question of how the Swedes are, it's a question of how the people coming into the country are and what they want and what their views, dreams and hopes are. And many people coming to Sweden, they don't come to Sweden to become Swedish. They come to Sweden because maybe they couldn't be Kurdish in their country of origin, or they couldn't be Shia Muslim because they lived in a Sunni dominated country, or they come because they were oppressed, like the Hussars of Iran, with their country of origin is Afghanistan, but most of them lived in Iran and they were oppressed there. So you have to take that into consideration as well, and what they have with them and how far they are in their values, views, and dreams from the people in the country they are coming to. So that it's the meeting that's interesting, and of course it's a failure. But I would say that it's not the failure of any policy in Sweden. It's not the failure of integration policy or schools or job policy or nothing like that. There was too many who came too fast. And no country, I would challenge any country, it's never been done before, that level that we had. and you'd be able to integrate them into a whole. So it would always be a failure. Some mistakes were made, you could have done something better, but if you're doing it on that level, you will always fail. And it's not a question of Swedish culture, Swedish character. You could have the best best culture and character in the whole wide world. You would still fail.
Let me ask you to broaden out finally here. You've painted, I've got to say, this quite bleak picture of Sweden's future. Put it in context for us of the wider European or even Western moment, because we've talked about Giorgia Meloni in Italy. Clearly, Eastern European countries, one by one, have become much more nationalistic, much more right-wing, quote-unquote. And there are substantial minorities in other Western countries like France who still vote for these so-called far-right parties. It does feel like there is a turn against that kind of cosmopolitan, global world dream and future that we were brought up believing was a near certainty, that so-called end of history moment most definitely feels over. Where do these trends lead us, do you think? Is it to ever smaller kind of nation states that are ever more uniform and trying to kind of reduce that mixing? What does the future look like?
Yeah, so I would say that we're still stuck in the end of history, because what Fukuyama said that I think not appreciated enough is that there is no other game in town that inspires people. So it used to be that there was an alternative view in the Socialist International that was a challenge to the capitalism of the West. And this is a challenge to all the right-wing and left-wing populists all over Europe, is like, what is your alternative view of the future? And they've been lacking in answering that. But I would say there are signs that these parties are inspiring each other more and having a deeper connections to each other and learning from each other and also cooperating on an EU level. So they switched from being anti-EU to becoming pro-EU, but they want to turn EU into something else. One of the top brass of the EU said that we should strive to make European countries less homogenous so that we take away the populist fire. So that you have that movement as well.
And so you see a sort of showdown between the populist forces and the kind of
authoritarian
authoritarian forces.
Yeah, and that's basically also a tension within liberal democracy. Which part of it that you put the emphasis on? So the liberal part or the democracy part? And the populists, of course, they put the emphasis on democracy. People should have a vote on everything. People should have influence over their countries. We should take power back to the people, back to the nation state. And if people don't want migrants, then they should be able to vote on it. And then you have the liberal part of it, which is minority protection, human rights. We've signed these conventions. These are the rules-based order, and there are for the economy to function well, we need a certain set of rules. And so there's a tension there, and that I would say that in the future, that tension I only see increasing.
It becomes a kind of elite versus less elite clash then, doesn't it? Because clearly the liberal part is more emphasized by people who are kind of at the higher ends of the establishment or income scale, and the populist part is emphasized by people who aren't. So you're almost in a kind of internal tensions, possible civil war kind of zone if these trends just carry on exaggerating.
Yeah, and the civil war, I would say it's a much higher risk in countries like the United States, at least in many of the populist parties. They don't have the, if you talk about Meloni, for example, the fascist and the boogeyman. I mean, there's in her case, there's a very clear-cut evidence that it was the old fascist party translated and then became the brothers. So the question is it still a fascist party, or is she more of a populist, right, socially conservative party? Now, I would argue that that's more important now. It's not. It can still be dangerous if you view her policies as dangerous, but the characteristics of the fascists and the communists and the Nazis in the early 20th century was that they had they fielded paramilitary organizations that were a physical threat to people, and we're not seeing that in Europe. In the United States, you have militias and stuff, and I'm not an expert in how many crimes they are committing, but I mean people are very armed there, and that's not the same. It's not happening with the Sweden Democrats, and I mean the Meloni's, the brothers of Italy, they are not marching in the streets. So the threats are elsewhere, I would say. It's not street violence is not the thing people should be afraid of. There are other more scary things that will happen, I think.
I'm gonna take that as a moment of almost optimism. Well, there was a the fact that we're not having impending civil war and impending street violence, I'm taking as Eva's moment of sunshine on this well, hour. So I'm gonna.
It's you. I can be optimistic. I feel like I've been pegged. You because every question you start, that's very pessimistic. But then you ask a question that I have to answer in a pessimistic way. It's your fault.
Okay. Well, I'll give you the floor now. Give us a what is the optimistic scenario we should take away with us, if there is one?
I would say that in Sweden right now, we have a lot of things going well. It's the country is great in a lot of ways, and still is. It's just that the challenges are huge. But I mean, integration is working as well. So many of the things I'm saying, it's still real. But I think we have a strong economy compared to Italy, for example. We have a lot of things going for us. And integration is working. It's just the Rorschach test of Sweden Democrats. That's how you like. Are we right now in 1933 in Germany, or are we someplace else in 2022 Sweden? And if you ask the left wing, then it's 1933 in Germany, and if you ask the right wing, we are in 2022, finally starting to rise to the challenge. So I'm optimistic for this government to do something.
Ivar Arpi, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Ivar Arpi, a Swedish journalist, formerly of Svenska Dagbladet, which is the big broadsheet over in Sweden, and now editor of his own website called Straight Right. So no ambiguity about what his political angle is on this, although I did try to push back a little bit and explore some of his ideas. Clearly, what's going on in Sweden is interesting, it's significant, it's concerning, and it probably represents similar kinds of situations happening in other countries around Europe that is going to continue playing out. We would like to investigate it more. There is a plan afoot to actually go to Sweden in December and find out for ourselves. But until then, thank you for tuning in. This was Unheard.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.